Hey everyone, it's time for another reaction video. So if you are someone that pays attention to Discovery Institute, you may have noticed that they're really ramping up their propaganda campaign this year. They're putting out a lot of stuff. Discovery Institute, if you don't know, is the Christian propaganda mill out of Seattle that is responsible for the intelligent design movement, which is creationism in a tuxedo. It's pseudoscientific propaganda. And I am their most hated person, as I have made it my one of my mission objectives to completely ruin and humiliate every single member of that disgusting, toxic piece of shit organization. So anyway, if you haven't seen it, I have a playlist called Exposing Discovery Institute, where I just go down the roster and expose every single one of these clowns. I'm going to keep doing that. It's been a little while since I've checked in with them. I've been kind of doing a lot of like anti-vaxxers, and I started doing the pseudo-archaeology stuff. So I've been kind of, you know, distracted by other targets. But this year, so Stephen Meyer is the main dude, and he's been doing tons of appearances in different places. And also, he just put out a theatrical feature film. It's a pseudo documentary, and has been in played in theaters for a week or so. And they're obviously playing it up online. Oh, such an awesome movie, and it made so much money. So many people are going to see our awesome super truth movie. So there's a lot of stuff. I've kind of decided that I need to pivot back to these guys and really nail them on every single dumb thing that they're doing. So there's going to be a little bit of attention devoted to this. So Meyer, Tour, and Lennox did a video that got a lot of views, so I'm definitely going to react to that at some point. Meyer was on Epoch Times. I gotta do that one. I gotta figure out a way to download the full pseudo documentary. I should probably do a reaction to the movie itself. But today we're just since we have so much of this to do, I'm just gonna get my feet wet today. We're gonna look at two videos where Meyer is talking to this guy. I call him Fish Hat. I just know him. I know of him as Fish Hat because he has this shit podcast where he's an apologist and he interviews all the other apologists. And he usually is wearing a hat with a fish on it. So I know of him as Fish Hat. The channel is called Daily Dose of Wisdom, though. So I've covered episodes of him talking to James Tour and other stuff like that. So he's a moron. He knows absolutely dick about science. And whenever his apologist heroes go on a show, he just goes, "Oh yeah, that sounds smart. You sound like a smart guy. I trust you blindly." And so that's what he's going to do with Stephen Meyer. These are two fairly short videos, so that's why I wanted to do this first, just kind of knock out something kind of fun and quick, and then we will go in other reaction videos to come very soon. We will cover the Meyer Tour Lennox thing. I'll try to get the movie right there. We're going to do a bunch more. I'm going to be a gigantic thorn in the side of Stephen Meyer and the rest of these Discovery Institute piece of shit douchebag frauds because they are involved in this. They are one of the many arms of the Christian nationalist movement that is trying to take over our government, eradicate the separation of church and state. They're trying to take over. Well, they already have infiltrated the Supreme Court. They're infecting every branch of the government, trying to weaponize the Constitution against us. They repealed Roe v. Wade. They're trying to make it so that tax dollars can fund private Christian schools. It's a fucking mess. It's a gigantic mess, and they are part of that movement, so they're horrible, evil people, and I will do everything in my power to expose and humiliate them, especially Stephen Meyer. Look at this goon. Look at this thick-necked goon. So this video is called Stephen Meyer Just Destroyed Atheist Explanations of DNA. 15 minutes. So look at that, 15 minutes, and he has overturned the entire field of biology and genetics, right? So this should be good. So we're going to do this one, and then we're going to do another one. I'll tell you the title of that after this one. So this one, yeah, this came out 4 weeks ago. It's got 53K views. So, you know, decent little viewership there. And Meyer's going to say a bunch of dumb shit about presumably DNA. I am assuming that this is going to be some Dembski specified information shit, because what I've seen from little bits of previews, they're leaning heavily into crazy information in the DNA, therefore God, and just kind of generally look at all this crazy shit in the cell, therefore God. That's pretty much it. That's pretty much all they've ever had, and they have not updated their script at all, from what I can tell. But maybe he's going to surprise me with something out of left field. I would bet my life savings that he will not. But let's hear Meyer go through the same old tired bullshit apologist script as always, and take a giant crap on it, like I always do. So let's watch this now.
I watch too much materialistic content is my problem, so I'm always getting the other side. One response that I'll hear often is the idea that...
Sorry, materialistic content. Like, what are you watching? Influencers that, like, want you to buy, like, nice cars and clothes and watches and shit? Materialistic content. So people who aren't constantly talking about God and souls, right? As though scientists are supposed to be talking about God and souls all the time while describing molecular biology concepts. Fucking idiot, man.
It's just biology, and the information is being imposed by the human.
Is the genetic code really a code?
It certainly is a code. You can read it as a code, but even transcribe a book into DNA letters, and you could read it out again. You could preserve it in DNA. That's how code-like it is. It really is a completely code-like code, a digital code. It's merely quaternary rather than binary. And of course, it's not put together by design.
So, Dave, do you agree that DNA contains highly specific information?
Of a living organism, yeah. Not in general, right? I love this. They're using my fucking clip. So first of all, okay, a couple things here. So they're playing Dawkins, of course. And yeah, and they're using the example. He said that you can transcribe something. You can use the symbols that we use for when we describe DNA to encode something. Of course you can. You can do that with anything. You can do it with dots and dashes. That's what fucking Morse code is and shit. You're just saying that humans can make codes with things. They're right. That doesn't make DNA. You can call DNA a code. That doesn't mean, right. All of this is always just humans can make codes. Therefore, anything that you could feasibly describe as a code is made by a mind. It's a non-starter. It's not a valid argument. That's a fallacious argument. But then, okay, so we've got this clip here. So first of all, I like how anytime apologists source footage like this, their viewers are so fucking dumb that they have to tell them what to think by putting like goofy music on it. They're like, goofy music, uh-oh, something silly is happening, haha, look at this silly thing, because they can't rely on them to like listen to words and actually understand what anyone's saying. So they're like, oh, look at this silly thing. So if you missed this was I went on MythVision and took calls from creationists, and this douchebag showed up with this kid on his knee and started shrieking about just DNA is a code, DNA is a code, DNA is a code, and got real, real testy. And of course, just was spewing the hot gibberish apologist script. So here, okay, let's see how much of this clip that Fish Hat wants to show.
You can have a DNA strand of any random nucleobases, but the DNA of a living organism has the code for that organism. Yeah.
Okay, so DNA is not just like a chemical blob. It stores instructions using symbolic sequences.
No, it's not a symbolic sequence. It's a sequence of nucleobases, right? You just have ACTG.
Yeah, it's not symbolic, right? We can use the letters, our own man-made symbols, to represent the nucleotides. Nucleotides themselves are not symbols. He just doesn't understand what these words mean. And so he's like, oh, I'm surprised that you don't comply with the dumb thing I said.
in some order. That doesn't make it a blob, right? So let's save some time. You're going to do a whole like specified information William Dembski thing, right?
Computer code, books, blueprints, software.
Yeah, those are all things that humans created. Humans can create things. That doesn't mean that DNA was made by
Professor
an intelligence.
Do humans have minds? Derek, do humans have minds?
Let's get a finger on the mute and disconnect button here. This guy's getting real testy.
One of the irritating organs.
Fucking, oh my God. It's like, how desperate are you? You got the goofy music. You selectively edit it so that you take out like the 5 minutes where I tried to explain molecular biology to this douchebag while he just talked over me and started shrieking, blah, 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 blah. And then you cut to a woman running away, first of all. So there's some little misogyny there. Dave is the woman running away. No, I tried to explain shit to this guy, and then he was absolutely incapable of adult conversation. That's what happened. But sure, goofy music and cut it that way if you want. Yeah, he was citing examples of codes that humans create. Therefore, DNA is made by a mind. That's a fallacious argument. I'm sorry. You can say humans make complex things, therefore a god made everything. Well, complex things are made in nature too. You can look at a snowflake or something, and I said this to Ken Hovind, right? Complex objects can be made by natural forces, therefore everything is made by natural forces, natural processes. That would also be a fallacious argument. It's true. It's a true argument that nature did generate all of these structures, but that particular line of reasoning would be fallacious. I don't know how to get this through their fucking heads that you can't just point at shit that humans do and then say, because it's analogous to this other thing, this must have been made by a god. It doesn't work like that. It doesn't fucking work like that. And that fucking dude and Meyer and Fish Hat and none of these people Meyer maybe has the capacity to understand prebiotic chemistry, but he never will. Actually, I mean, to be honest, I think he doesn't. But Fish Hat and that other douchebag, of course they don't. They're not going to understand RNA world. They're not going to understand replicators and systems chemistry and autocatalysis and shit like that. So there's just no way to get them even remotely on board with principles of chemistry that are going to get you to replicators, at which point natural selection takes over. There's just no way to do that. They're just absolutely ideologically dead set on this has to have been made by God, because that's my worldview. That's how I want it to be. Therefore, I'm going to literalize these analogies. And I'm going to, that's all there is to it, right? They don't understand the chemistry by which nucleic acids can have come to be through natural processes. And then so all they have is this game of, well, humans write software, and that's kind of like DNA. So DNA came from a god, and it's the Christian god, because I say so. That's all these assholes have. Okay, let's see what they do to Aaron as well.
That I get like every day. Is the stupid notion that, you know, that coded information always comes from a mind, and therefore DNA is proof of God, because DNA is assumed to be a code. And but while we could argue that there is an analogous interpretation of that, if we were to say that because of this analog in our understanding, that we say that changes in the construct will produce different proteins or whatever, and therefore, the changes that it codes for different proteins. If we use that kind of language and call it a code in that capacity, then DNA would be the exception to the rule, because it obviously does not come from a mind, and there's no way that a mind could do that.
For the person who sort of thinks it's just biology doing biology, and we're the ones.
Yeah, this objection in a number of ways is that, well, the idea of information is just a metaphor, or we're imputing the presence of information and we're anthropomorphizing. But actually, there's a very specific mathematical definition of the kind of information that's present inside living systems. It's Shannon information plus specificity required for function. And so when you break down what's actually going on.
Yeah. So he's okay. So this is Dembski's bullshit script. And so they use these terms from information theory to make it seem like it's super intellectual, but they're just bastardizing legitimate terms. So Shannon information just refers to how unlikely something is, right? How unlikely, in this case, a sequence of nucleotides, right? You can do simple examples like the sun will rise tomorrow versus it snowed in the Sahara. The latter contains more Shannon information because it's a less likely event. But so if you're trying to put that upon nucleic acids, right, you're talking about how unlikely a particular sequence of bases is in DNA or in RNA. All of this falls apart, right? Number one, the intent with Meyer and Dembski is to pretend that all of this shit is random, but it's not. Evolution is not random. There are random components. Mutations are random. And then natural selection is non-random, right? Natural selection selects those sequences that that confer some kind of advantage, whether it's a living organism or a molecule or a replicator or a set of replicators, right? If there's a mutation that causes more efficient self-replication, even prior to the existence of a living organism, right? Natural selection is acting upon that. All that means is that those proliferate in a statistically significant way. That's all it is. These are blind processes, but natural selection is not random. So that's part one. Part one is that the implication that all of this is random does not work. It's not all random. Natural selection is not random. Then, so Dembski does this bullshit. I'm wrapping up a Dembski video, by the way. That's why I wanted to, I knew they were going to do specified information shit. So I decided I'm just going to go ahead and do my Dembski debunk. So that'll come out pretty soon. I'm almost done with it. And so what Dembski does is he takes these things, Shannon information, which I just described, and Kolmogorov information, which is how much can a sequence be abbreviated. So AAAAAAAA could be abbreviated as 8 A's. So that has less Kolmogorov information because it can be abbreviated in that sense. And then something that's is just 8 different characters can't be abbreviated at all. So it has more Kolmogorov information. So Dembski does this bullshit where this is what they do. Those are real terms, right? But then what Dembski does with them is not science. It's not legitimate math or science or information theory or anything. He just blindly asserts specified information is Shannon minus Kolmogorov. He just pulls that out of his ass. And lots of researchers have pointed out a lot of errors here. Number one, what I just said, that these are not all random processes. So it simply cannot be applied to the biological world. You just can't. Number two, Dembski did a bunch of shit math where he took the log of something where it already had the log taken. And so he didn't do the math right. there's a bunch of shit. So stay tuned for the Dembski debunk. But they do the Shannon information and all this. Tor did this shit in the debate as well, because his fourth talking point was specified information, right? He obviously got coached by Dembski, and James is an idiot, so he doesn't understand that that's not science, that it's just some bullshit that Dembski pulled out of his ass. let's see what he says.
What's going on meets the definition of specified information, or as Leslie Orgel, one of the early or pioneers in origin of life research, termed it, specified complexity. People a lot of times will say, well, specified complexity, that's an intelligent design terminology that they invented. No, it came out of origin of life research.
And then Dembski co-opted specified complexity and made up specified information, which is not real. That's not a thing. It is Christian propaganda. You can talk about specified complexity. So it's true that the sequence of nucleotides in a gene is different from a random string of nucleotides. Nobody's disputing that. And you can use terminology like code. You totally can do that. I don't have a problem with saying that the sequence of nucleotides in a gene codes for a particular amino acid sequence that will be a protein. That's absolutely true. But there's no specified information. It's a nebulous term. It's vague. It's not properly defined. It is simply Christian propaganda, just like irreducible complexity, all the other shit that we have debunked to high heaven. It is simply a sequence of nucleotides. A sequence of nucleotides, it is a particular sequence of nucleotides that codes for a particular protein in the context of transcription and translation, but that's all it is. So this is why prebiotic chemistry has become such a focal point for them, because they know that all of this shit falls apart if you can explain how these functional sequences came to be by natural processes, which Origin of Life research does, right? We don't have every single piece understood, but we certainly have demonstrated empirically very, very thoroughly how these biopolymers can have come about and how they can evolve by natural selection. This is not up for discussion for at least 20 years, right? For basically the entire 21st century, we have been doing research in systems chemistry where we are showing how ribozymes, how sets of molecules can evolve by natural selection. We have shown this. It's not up for discussion. So they, number one, pretend all of that research doesn't exist, and number two, just sick James Tour on the whole prebiotic chemistry thing to just go, that's impossible. Molecules don't move towards life. This is all dumb and none of this works. Molecules all fall apart, blah, 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 blah. Because they have to do that hit job on prebiotic chemistry so that they can say, see, you've got these super duper special genes in the DNA, and there's no way they could have gotten there without a God going, I want that sequence of nucleotides. There's all too many crazy possible combinations. Only these super special ones are here, so God did it, right? So they've had to like heavily sedate Tour for several years now to maintain his presence in their organization and actually parade him out and like make him say things in front of a camera without getting all agitated and shit. But they need him because he's the one that that they put forward to what they want their viewers to believe is that he's demolishing the entire concept of prebiotic chemistry and that abiogenesis is physically possible. He fails miserably, as you all know. I have humiliated every attempt out of his dumb face to discredit an entire field of science he doesn't understand. It's all bullshit, lies, and propaganda. But they need him. They need him desperately. So they're continuing to try to utilize him as much as they can. Yep.
Orgel was contrasting crystals that have a repetitive and highly ordered pattern, NaCl, NaCl, redundancy, where this, you get the same pattern over and over again, with random polymers that perform no function. They've just a series of, say, amino acids that can do nothing, with polymers, biomacromolecules that have the property of specificity of arrangement in order to produce a function.
Yeah, and those are totally valid terms, valid comparison, valid distinction, right? It's true. A random sequence of nucleotides will not necessarily yield a functional protein. Only these particular sequences will. The problem is that they will deny that these sequences can come about by natural processes. And all of the science is pointing that they absolutely can, right? There's so much research that is showing that random sequences are a source of function, right? Some percentage will perform function, and nature has all these opportunities to produce these biopolymers, many, many, many different sequences. And then the ones that perform function can be selected for. Natural selection will take those and do shit with them. So that's the part that they just pretend doesn't exist.
And that's what we call specified complexity. And in our uniform and repeated experiment, which is what's present in DNA, what's present in proteins, and in our uniform and repeated experience, which is the basis of all scientific reasoning, whenever you see specified complexity or specified information would be another way to refer to it.
It's not another way to refer to it. Those are different terms. One is real. The other is bullshit that you made up. Sorry.
It's always the product of a mind. And so there's a very precise definition of from the information sciences of the type of phenomenon that's present in DNA and in RNA, in proteins. And that phenomenon can be called a specified complex sequence. And when we have specified complexity present in any system where we've known the origin, it's always been the product of intelligence. So
where we've known the origin, when we make shit with our minds, it was made by a mind. Therefore, anything that we assert is like that must also have been made by a mind. Do you see the trickery here? Do you see the little caveats? That's it, right? Humans can make codes. Therefore, anything that resembles a code was made by a mind. It is a fallacious argument. This is the central argument of all of their bullshit. And it does not work. It falls apart. That's all there is to it.
This is not something that's being imputed. This is something that's present in the molecule. And the whole when the whole of molecular biology is built on teleological language, unavoidable teleological language. We have code. We have text. We have code. We have translation. We have transcription. We have information processing systems. This is the way molecular biologists have to talk to describe what's going on. And we're also discovering known computer design patterns in the information processing system of the cell. You have automated error correction. You can watch it happening. We have spell check in the computer.
It's not spell check, though. See, this is all that they can do, right? There are enzymes that recognize and repair mutations in the genome. Yeah, that doesn't mean it is spell check, right? It's a dip. They're analogous, right? Do you know what an analogy is, Meyer? Okay, so it's like this other thing. You can draw comparisons to it, but you have an enzyme, right? If an enzyme evolves, right? If you have OxoG, right? Guanine can be oxidized to become OxoG, and then there's a glycosyl. That can be a problem because it'll code for, instead of C, it'll code for, I forget, A or T. I don't remember. It just changes, right? If you oxidize it, then that changes the base pairing rule, right? So you might get the wrong base, and that could be deleterious. So if an enzyme happens to evolve, in this case, I think it's a glycosylase enzyme, that will go it will, it makes a, I think a kink in the backbone, or it does something that's recognizable to the active site of an enzyme. This is all by chance, right? It happens to fit into the active site of a particular enzyme that evolved by chance, and it will snip it out, and then another enzyme will replace, you know, put the polymerase. I think I gotta look up the mechanism again. I forget exactly, but I think it snips out either the base or the whole nucleotide. I don't recall. And then another polymerase enzyme. I think it's just the base. I think it kicks off the base. And then polymerase enzyme will put the new... Well, actually, okay, you have to... I don't remember off the top of my head the exact mechanism. But what we're saying is that the enzyme happens to do that, and it confers a survival advantage because it's helping maintain the fidelity of the genome. And so that's valuable to whatever organism. And this is happening way before. I mean, I don't remember if that, I'm not sure if that evolved in when life was exclusively unicellular or if it was already multicellular. I'd have to look that up. But there are multiple enzymes like that. They each have a very particular unique function. They will recognize one thing, right? Like a thymine dimer from UV light or whatever it is. There are enzymes that recognize these particular mutations and fix them. And they don't get them every time, right? They help a lot, but we don't catch these enzymes don't catch every single mutation. And so that's why cancer is a thing, right? There's mutations happening all the time. It's just a matter of time until you get a mutation in a proto-oncogene, and then you get cancer. So not really saying much here. It's just a lot of the old look at the words we use, right? We can use these words to describe DNA. Therefore, it has to have been made by a mind. There's no logical foundation to this argument. There's nothing. It's just, it only works on people that desperately want it to be true, like Fish Hat.
Well, we've got automated error correction in molecular biology. You've got, you have hierarchical filing of information. There's a hierarchical organization of the information in the genome and beyond the genome. When we had a computer,
what hierarchy? What is he even talking about? Are you talking about histone modification, or is he going to talk about the torus interactome or something like that? Like, he's just inserting this verbiage arbitrarily to make nature sound like a computer program. He wants it to sound like a computer program so that everyone listening will go, well, computer programs are made by humans. So nature was made by all this, the molecule stuff was made by a god mind. It's very sleazy, very deliberate deception.
Computer programmer from Microsoft, and one of their elite architect level programmers several years ago, write 10,000 lines of code so that we could depict the gene expression system, the protein, the system of protein synthesis. One day he came into my office and threw a book down on my table called Design Patterns, a manual for software engineers. And he said, I get an eerie feeling that someone figured this out before us. And I said, what do you mean? And he explained that a design pattern is a known strategy for storing or processing digital information. And there are multiple known computer design patterns at work inside the cell that he was learning about as he was learning how the information in DNA is expressed in proteins. So information in living systems is not merely a metaphor.
Cool story, bro. Yeah, take that, biologists. Computer guy said that DNA is like computer program. Therefore, God made DNA. That's all you can do, man. You can't, you cannot, you, there's, they have zero ability to approach the these principles of molecular biology in good faith. They can't do it, you know.
It's not a concept that we're imputing onto what's going on in biology. By any reasonable understanding of key definitions of types of information, there is a very important type of information present in the cell, and that is specified information or functional information or specified complexity, where each of these terms means roughly the same thing.
No, they don't. They do not at all mean the same thing. You just said three different things and are blindly asserting that they're the same because you want to co-opt the academic pedigree of a legitimate term, specified complexity, and pretend that your propaganda is science. Right. This is you're laundering the credibility of Orgel and pretending that Dembski is running right alongside him. Ooh, he's taking this idea and doing no, absolutely not.
A highly improbable sequence, which is in which the parts of the sequence are nevertheless specifically arranged as a condition of performing an independent function. And that is exactly what's going on in inside the DNA and the protein, the DNA protein system.
That's an interesting point you're making at the end there as well about how often in science people are kind of in their own area of expertise and specialty. And I know more recently you guys have been focusing on getting like the engineers together with the biologists and getting people to look at this from both of those modalities to kind of unpack everything that's going on. And
the DI is overflowing with legitimate experts. So many biologists, so many legitimate actively publishing biologists are working at Discovery Institute. Oh, wait, no, I forgot. Fucking zero. Zero. Zero legitimate biologists. Actually, zero legitimate scientists of any kind. Meyer's not one. None of these guys are actual active publishing scientists. The only one is Tour. He's not formally on the payroll, but he gets his lab funded by the DI. So he's locked in there. He needs that funding. No, there's none. They are frauds in suits trying their best to resemble true academics. Not a single one among them.
I think that's such an important understanding as well, that when like a computer engineer or a software engineer specialist looks at this, they're like, you just gave a great example of they're seeing it jumping off the page to them.
They're seeing things that biologists don't see.
Right.
Because they understand the informational dynamics of any information. They understand the dynamics of any information processing system. They understand the kind of engineering constraints that need to be applied first to produce information and then to process it in a way that will achieve a functional endpoint.
You see what he just said? To produce information. So they will deny this up and down, but they are trying to brainwash the viewer into imagining information as this nebulous, ethereal substance that is injected into the DNA by a higher power. Nothing is producing information. You have a sequence of nucleotides. That's it, right? It's not the case that the sequence of nucleotides in a gene needs some extra juice or something to code for the amino acids in the protein. It's just codons, right? It's just CATG, blah, blah, blah. And then you get the mRNA transcript based on base pairing rules. And then again, based on base pairing rules, you get the tRNAs one at a time to make the protein. Nothing is producing information. And the engineers that he's talking about, first of all, I can't imagine they have any legitimate scholars in that field either. They don't have any biologists. They don't have any engineers. But why would an engineer be aware of the biological processes by which those sequences came to be, right? Meyer needs everyone watching to believe that it's supposed to be completely random. It's not completely random. Natural selection is a thing. And he's talking about DNA in extant life, right? He's obviously, in all of his propaganda, he's showing modern cells that are alive today, that contain genomes that are the product of billions of years of evolution, multiple billions of years of evolution. So you're skipping all of that biological history and going, well, how did this genome get like this? Those stupid atheists want you to believe that nucleotides floated together one at a time by chance to make this genome. No, nobody's fucking saying that. It took billions of years, and we're starting all the way back with RNA world. So when you're talking about DNA at all in the first place, you're ignoring all of that. We're talking about RNA world. Life predates DNA. Life came before DNA. DNA came after. All of this, it's just like they need for you to believe that science suggests it's random, but it's not. His viewers just don't stand a shot in hell at understanding scientific principles surrounding prebiotic chemistry, so he can get away with it. And that's where Tor comes in to convince everyone. No, there's nothing to see here. There's no prebiotic chemistry can happen at all. Molecules don't move towards life, blah, 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 blah. Trust me, I'm a chemist, so don't look at this. Don't learn anything about this field of science. Take it from me.
And biology is all about function. You can't get away from teleological language in biology, because everything, every part of a living system is doing something for something else. It's doing something in service of the survival of the organism, ultimately, and often multiple penultimate sort of lower level goals that are in service of that higher level goal of survival. So it's impossible to understand biology without understanding the functional logic of a biological system. And that has all to do with the storage and processing and expression of information, both genetic information, and we're now finding information at higher levels and stored in other types of systems. Carbohydrates, for example, have arguably more information stored in them than do nucleic acids, the famous DNA and DNA and RNA molecules.
What the fuck are you talking about? What are you talking about? Where do carbohydrates code for? Or are we doing transcription and translation on carbohydrates? That doesn't mean anything. Carbohydrates are energy storage. We do metabolism with carbohydrates. But the other thing, it's just like, why is anyone so surprised that billions of years of evolution produced extant organisms with efficient genomes? And I mean, honestly, they're not that, they're fairly efficient, but there's still enormous amounts of junk DNA, right? That's the other myth that they peddle, is that, oh, we figured out that there's no junk DNA. Yeah, there is. There's a shit ton of junk DNA. At least 80% of the genome is completely non-functional. So that is a fact, and they have to counter that fact with propaganda that says, no, look, they figured out all these other functions. Yeah, they figured out that there's like promoters and shit like that, but that's only a few more percent, right? You've got 1-2% protein coding, and then about 10%, that serve auxiliary function, promoters and things like that. Mostly junk. So you have genes that code for proteins that perform a function efficiently because they've had billions of years of evolution to get there, right? You don't know what that gene looked like, 500 million years ago or a billion years ago. It may have coded for a protein that was less efficient, but over time it becomes more efficient because of natural selection. Natural selection is non-random. So all of this bullshit about the math does not work, because that kind of math would apply to things like poker hands and flips of a coin that are truly random. Right. There's no, if you wanted to look at 100 flips of a coin and how long would it take to get a particular sequence of the flips of a coin, you could do it with all randomness, but that's not an analog of the biological world then. Right. You would have to do something like, if you have 100 spots, whenever you flip one and it gets the right answer, it gets cemented in, and then you keep going. So the first time you go, let's say 50 of them get stuck in their position because that was the desired outcome of that flip or whatever it is. And then the next time, half of the next ones get. So instead of 10 to the 88 million gazillion whatever, it takes like, 30 or 50, or I don't know, however many tries to get all of them in the right sequence, because there's that component of non-randomness where when an outcome is beneficial to the desired result, in this case, whether it's a sequence of nucleotides that yields a functional protein or the set of 100 coin flips that we wanted, that when you get something that works that way, it stays. Because there's a biological impetus for a good sequence of nucleotides that yield a functional protein that is rewarded statistically because it enhances replication, it enhances survivability. That's the part that they never, ever address. They won't do it.
Molecule. So what you have in biology is wheels within wheels of integrated functional complexity that is dependent on information. And your little video just completely ignores that.
Hey, I didn't make it.
The smart people talking about what you lie about totally ignores the bullshit that you just said, where you are the one ignoring everything that I just said. Wheels and wheels of complexity. It's all so crazy complex because God, and those stupid atheists are ignoring that dumb shit I made up about wheels upon wheels of complexity. You are the one, motherfucker, who is ignoring biological principles. You will never approach this in good faith. You can't do it.
I'm just a messenger.
I'm not blaming you, Brandon, but I am triggering me this morning. I was in a good mood until we started talking.
Yes, Meyer, I will continue to trigger your dumb bitch face. I will be all over you. I'm going to be a thorn in your side for the rest of the year. Every piece of bullshit propaganda you put out, I'm going to take a big steamy dump all over it and get 5 times the view count. Okay, buddy? So be prepared to get triggered quite a lot.
It's interesting to see. First of all, how easily people will accept something like that. And secondly, how weak the arguments are on the other side when you get into the science.
Talk about projection, dude. How easily people just accept things. Not like our viewers. Our viewers are critical thinkers. They're totally not just going, oh, they said a science word and he has a tie on, so it must be true. Not like those stupid evolutionists, right, who actually fucking understand molecular biology and talk about it honestly and refer to the primary scientific literature that proves you wrong. The fucking projection, dude.
You know, and often, people that have a faith perspective, or if you accept, heaven forbid, the theory of intelligent design, this is my Wikipedia page claims that I'm a pseudoscientist. And so, well, fair enough. Call me.
Yeah, fair enough. Intelligent design is not a theory. It is pseudoscience. It is bullshit masquerading as science. You're pretending that religion is science by dressing it up with scientific terminology. It is pseudoscience. Your Wikipedia page accurately describes you as a pseudoscience peddler. And hopefully it says grifting fraud for money, right? very well funded by wealthy Christian nationalists who intend to erode the separation of church and state. You're a piece of shit, Meyer. You're a garbage person. And it doesn't matter how much you present yourself as a calm, mindful, thoughtful scholar, you're a garbage piece of shit human. And I will continue to show everyone exactly what you are.
Be what you will, but there is no science in a video like what you just showed. And the scientific problems with that are legion, and our team knows them very well. And it's one of the reasons that we think intelligent design is actually part of the story, because we know from, again, our uniform and repeated experience that whenever we see information and we trace it back to its source, we always come to a mind, not a material process, whether it's digital code in a software or a paragraph in a book, or the information we're transmitting right now. Or...
look at a book. The book didn't write itself. Humans write books. Therefore, anything that is remotely analogous to a book, which DNA is not, by the way, must have come from a mind. I mean, give me a fucking break. Like, DNA is not like the English language. There's not this whole universe of syntax and semantics. I'm sorry, DNA is not like the English language. It's not an honest comparison. Humans write books, therefore DNA is made by a god, is a dog shit argument. And only the dumbest people alive are going to fall for that. I'm sorry.
Or information in a radio signal, or a hieroglyphic inscription. Information is a hallmark of mind, and you cannot build life without it. And that is, I think, clue one that life was designed by a master programmer.
So you've just given me a perfect transitional point. Before I make it, I want to just say that as a compliment, as amazing as you are at articulating all of this with words, there's something about seeing the animation in the documentary that is powerful in a different way. It's just like, if that's all true, if everything that animation is depicting is true, which I know that it is.
Yeah. So he obviously, he's probably talking about the new movie, right? And obviously the movie is just like, look at all this crazy shit in the cell. Look at all this crazy shit in a modern eukaryotic animal cell. How did that just float together by chance? It fucking didn't. It's the product of billions of years of evolution. And this is all they have. Fucking Fish Hat watched the movie and went, oh, wow, nature's crazy. I don't understand that, therefore God. Well, get an education. I don't know what to tell you, man, because we can very easily explain, right? You're looking at something that is the product of billions of years of evolution and saying, how did that float together and come to be? If that's what you're honestly thinking, then you're just admitting that you are not approaching this in good faith, right? You're too dumb to even know what you're leaving out of the equation. Right. You don't like this guy. Like, ask Fish Hat to tell you the difference between a eukaryotic cell and a prokaryotic cell. He couldn't do that. And then ask him to tell to explain the difference between a modern prokaryotic cell and an ancient one, or a modern prokaryotic cell and what could have been a protocell. He's not going to be able to do that. Right. So there's no basis to even have this conversation with a person like that. Fish Hat doesn't get it and he doesn't want to get it. Meyer gets it, but he's lying about it. Right. Or, I mean, the degree to which Meyer understands molecular biology, I'm not sure. He knows certainly more than the average person, but nowhere near what a molecular biologist knows that could actually very readily explain a lot of these processes. But it doesn't matter. Right. It's his job to pretend that doesn't exist. So
it's just basic molecular biology. You know,
that's what I'm saying. But as a person who hasn't taken those courses and really seen it all, like to like look at it and see the mechanisms and see the little guy walking along the string and like all these things, it's
every fucking time the dynein, right? So there's a protein that kind of looks like feet walking, and they're like, oh my god, there's no way that could be anything other than a little guy with a mind going, I want to walk along the tubule, therefore God. Like, it's just so fucking disingenuous. And then these asshats have the balls to whine about people very accurately and repeatedly calling them out for a God of the Gaps argument, right? All they're doing is going, look how crazy that is. How did that get there? I don't know. Must be God. It is, there is no more quintessential God of the Gaps approach than that, than just going, look at how crazy that is. Must be God. Right, you could say that about anything we've never understood, right? Anything about stellar formation, planetary formation, geological features, mountains, volcanoes, etc. We know now how that shit forms, right? We used to not, and we would go, oh, all that shit is gods, multiple different gods. And then we figured out what it is. So you not understanding something, therefore God, is not a valid argument, and it never will be. I'm sorry.
It strikes you in a way beyond what even a verbal description does.
Sure, right.
And so again, nothing against...
That's why we wanted to bring it to life. Picture's worth a thousand words, and a moving picture that's accurate to what we know scientifically worth many orders of magnitude more. And what you're describing is the kinesin walking motor protein, which step-by-step tows vesicles of material along fibers in the cell, and that function essentially like railroad tracks. So there's a whole automated factory of materials being moved from one place to another to where they're needed. That's just one of many molecular machines. We depict the ATP synthase, which is the turbine that's responsible for producing the energy-rich ATP molecules that make all metabolic processes possible. We depict the flagellar motor, or the little rotary engine that Michael Behe has made famous.
Of course, how are you going to not show the flagellum? As though Michael Behe made the bacterial flagellum famous. The fuck kind of sentence is that? Behe made the bullshit argument that the flagellum means God exists famous. He coined the irreducible complexity bullshit that has been so thoroughly debunked, it's not even funny. It's just, look at how crazy this shit is, therefore God. That's all it is. And you can say, oh, it's like a railroad, blah, blah, blah. No, it's not like a fucking railroad. How about you teach your viewers the actual mechanisms by which these proteins operate? Right? Why can't you go, well, this is exactly what's happening on the molecular level. It's not a little guy thinking, right? This is what's happening. And this is because this gene codes for that protein and it serves a function. So it's selected for. They'll never approach this in good faith. Obviously they won't. It's a propaganda organization, but you know.
And that's just one. Then we get into the digital information processing system. We show the information processing system, or one of them. There are two major information processing systems in the cell, one for the replication of information called DNA replication, and one for the expression of information in the form of proteins. And we show that system in a step-by-step way, in a kind of living color. It's pretty awesome. So with narration from one of our top scientists, Douglas Axe, who did his PhD at Caltech and had a long-term research appointment at Cambridge University. So
one of our top scientists who is not a scientist, Douglas Axe, the fucking poser. not a scientist. He had a long-term research position at Cambridge. Long-term research. Man, he must have published a lot of papers. He must have published a lot of zero papers in his long-term research position. It's so pathetic. They're just like, look at all our super awesome scientists that we have. See, we're not just propagandists posing as scientists. We have awesome scientists that do literally no research and publish zero papers. Axe had one fake paper that, if you watch my Axe video, I tear apart. It's just poser after poser after poser that are just like, hey, I got a PhD so that I could lie more convincingly, never contributed to any field of science whatsoever, but you have to think that I'm credible because I wear a suit and I talk confidently and you have no idea what the fuck I'm saying, but just trust me. It's so pathetic. One of our top scientists. Great job, Meyer. Awesome.
Really, some really top scientists in the film. And but you're right, the aesthetic and visual dimension of this brings us to life.
Yeah, no, it was also great to see in the documentary the different voices that you brought in. It wasn't all, you know, theist even. Like, I love to see that agreement within the scientific community around some of the core facts that were being described. And then, you know, I like how you guys handled it too, where it's like, let the implications of this kind of just rest on you. Just ponder this. You know, at times you didn't push it like in a over the top way, but it's just like, man, there's, I mean, so one thing I wanted to go to here, I got to be sensitive on our time, Dr. Meyer, because I could literally talk to you for hours. So I got to keep the ball rolling.
Yeah, that's a tactic, by the way, right? They learned their lesson. They used to push creation science and overtly refer to the Christian God. And then they realized that, right, there was Edwards v. Gillard decision prevented them from that in their quest to infiltrate the public school system. And so they realized, hey, this is going to be more effective if we don't overtly mention the Christian God. Everyone, all of our target audience is thinking Christian God, right? If you're like, ooh, this must have come from a designer. But what kind of designer could it have been? I don't know. I don't know what kind of designer. The fucking Christian God. And then if you talk to them individually, right? Dembski says it all the time, right? This only makes sense in the context of Christ or whatever. So they on the side, obviously encourage, yeah, we're talking about the Christian God, guys, obviously. They realize that their propaganda is more effective if they don't seem like they're proselytizing, but they are, right? It's religious propaganda.
Ball rolling, but I want to stay on this point too. So let me go. This is what I was going to transition into is you brought up your Wikipedia page and sort of the pseudoscientific accusation. And obviously all that really is, we talked about this on our last podcast, is just a pre-commitment to methodological naturalism, right? But right. I want people to...
No, it's educated people sniffing out your bullshit pseudoscience and debunking it, recognizing that you make fallacious arguments and color them with scientific terminology to make it seem like science. That's what it is. This fucking methodological natural... Wah, science is... science doesn't say gods and souls. Why is science so mean and not saying gods and souls? Because that's not what fucking science is. Science does not resort to supernatural explanations ever, okay? You have to get past this fish hat. You have to learn what science is and fucking deal with it, okay? It's the study of the natural world. That's what it is.
Really understand how silly that is to say, like, if you could just help walk someone through that, if you're seeing all kinds of evidence pointing in a particular direction, but you've decided at the front, we're going to call that evidence, we're going to call that a God of the gaps. If it points us there, we're just going to say, no matter what, it's a gap because we said so. It's a gap.
It's not a gap because it's a gap because you're pretending it's a gap, right? There's no preconceived notion here, right? We're looking for explanations, and you guys are going, look at the crazy thing. We don't know how the DNA, how the little guy going, I don't know, must be God. It's a fucking God of the gaps. I don't know what you're not seeing about it, right? You are the one with the preconceived ideological commitment that God must have existed, that God must exist and have created everything. That is what you are bringing to the table. Stop projecting.
Because we set the parameters on the outset. So now anything that points there, we're calling a God of the gaps, rather than, wait a second, there's just all kinds of evidence pointing in the direction of intelligent design. If you
except no, there's not. There's literally none. It's religious propaganda. Sorry.
Just don't start with the firmly held belief that there is no God. We know that's true. We know
nobody fucking says that. There are scientists who believe in God. Stop with this fucking straw man. Right? There's a difference between theism and creationism. Creationism, the idea that God went flibbity flabbity flu. Oh, I made the DNA and now we've got the life and we're blah blah blah. Is categorically different from there is a deity of some kind that created the universe and it unfolded according to natural scientific principles. I don't believe in that one either. But people who do, and there are scientists who do, they are not engaging in pseudoscience, right? They have a religious belief that does not infringe on science, right? Creationism infringes on science, not theism necessarily. So you're just trying to rile up people of faith by going, all the scientists are mean atheists. Well, they're fucking not. There are religious scientists. Okay? You're just lying.
Know that there's no God, so therefore we call it a God of the Gaps argument any time that something points us in that direction. Like, how can you just help
let's break it down, and we'll start with that big hairy term that you threw out there, methodological naturalism or methodological materialism.
The Darwinian mechanism of mutation and selection, which has long been posed as a kind of designer substitute mechanism, cannot build those systems. Then perhaps they look designed because they really were designed. But there's an even deeper consideration that points to intelligent design in biology.
One of the most brilliant theories of modern science was formulated by an American, J.D. Watson, and an Englishman, F.H.C. Crick.
As soon as we met, we found that although we had very different backgrounds, we had a lot of things in common.
Wow. Looks good, right, guys? That looks like a good, good little popcorn flick. The Darwinian mechanism of mutation and selection can't make all this shit because I say so, therefore God. Well, because I say so is not a fucking argument, Meyer. I'm sorry. And as I've proven in so many videos on all of you douchebags, you will never honestly represent what those processes are. You pretend that all mutations are point mutations. You ignore any kind of macro mutation, gene duplication and neofunctionalization, de novo genes, entire chromosome duplication, and then neofunctionalization of any coding region on that chromosome. There are ways for incredible change to occur very rapidly, even over a singular generation, and you just pretend that it's not there. You just pretend it doesn't exist. I've called you guys out for this shit so many times. I've done it in half of the videos on you guys because you say this crap all the time. You just blindly assert, fallaciously assert, that mutation and selection cannot produce sufficient biological diversity, and you're just lying. Like lying piece of shit liars, because that's what you are. Okay, let's go. Man, that was so much longer for a 15-minute video. Now we've got a 20-minute one. I'll try to get it a little faster this time. So this one is, we're with Fish Hat again, and it's Stephen Meyer reacts to viral science lies. Brilliant takedown. Trust me, guys, this is a brilliant takedown. They're science lies that went viral. Let's expose the lies. We're not the ones lying. We're exposing the lies. Okay? Let's check it out.
This cartoon tells a wonderful story. It's not plausible scientifically at almost every point along the way. This short video is, I think to chemists it would be offensive to talk about blobs. You need specificity in chemistry to build anything.
Yeah, this is Veritasium, 20 plus million subs, 7.7 million views. A very, I would say, good and to many convincing presentation of kind of the materialistic story of how life began here on planet Earth. Anytime that you have a question, comment, concern, anything, just like holler and I'll pause it right away.
Sure.
Where we are now, there is nothing. Well, not really nothing, but nothing interesting. There are only simple things like these blobs. This one might be a carbon dioxide molecule, or it might be cyanide. We don't know for sure what they are, but we...
Oh, come on, Derek. CO2 is linear. HCN is hydrogen cyanide. Sorry, I'm not going to nitpick Derek too much. Just from chemistry standpoint, I had to point that out.
Do know that these compounds are very simple. So for now, they'll just be blobs floating around our void. In fact, much of what we'll encounter along our journey here are just hypotheses. A lot of Earth's early history is still a mystery, so keep that in mind. Now, every so often, our blobs get a surplus of energy, maybe from a ray of UV light or a nearby hot source. This is the first major upgrade to our void, excess energy, as it allows our blobs to interact with each other.
Yeah, so this is something that I've said in a lot of my debunks, especially for the James Tour stuff, is that this is an aspect of prebiotic chemistry that the propagandists will never talk about. They will always try to imply that the laws of thermodynamics prevent the self-assembly of ordered structures and shit. It's actually the complete opposite. The second law of thermodynamics specifically prompts the self-assembly of ordered structures as a way of dissipating those free energy gradients that are coming in. So sunlight, specifically, whichever wavelength we're talking about, UV, yeah, UV, and but you know, other wavelengths as well. So when you have a gradient of free energy, that energy that is continuous, right? The Earth is an open system; it's not a closed system. We're receiving energy from off of Earth, namely the sun. Sets of molecules will self-organize so as to dissipate the free energy gradient and export disorder to the universe, right? Second law of thermodynamics says that for any spontaneous process, the entropy of the universe increases, right? So propagandists will try to misrepresent that law and pretend that it says that no order can arise spontaneously whatsoever. That's fucking insane. When water freezes to get ice or a snowflake or something like that, that's order. It's happening spontaneously. That happens spontaneously because when that order forms, it is forming some kind of pattern that makes the system go down in energy, and that energy is released to the surroundings. So the overall dispersal of energy increases. So the entropy of the universe increases. So when order forms locally, that's actually entropically favorable. All right, the energy is released, and the entropy of the universe increases. So I talk a lot about work from Eigen and some other stuff in the 70s that shows how abiogenesis in particular is prompted by thermodynamics. Right. So anytime you hear an apologist talk about abiogenesis violates the thermodynamics, blah, blah. No, they have no fucking idea what they're talking about. It is the precise opposite of the truth. The laws of thermodynamics prompt the formation of ordered structures and in particular life so as to dissipate the free energy gradients that are streaming in. So that's a good point. Right. Derek is saying you have all these molecules, but you have a source of energy that's coming in. You could have heat. You can have light, right? That's happening.
Most of the time, this interaction leads to nothing. But sometimes these blobs can combine into more complicated compounds. Here's a simple simulated example where we only have four red blobs. Right now, they are all individual particles, but each time step we move forward, let's say there's a 10% chance that all four combine into one red megablob. Now imagine this megablob isn't very stable. For every time step it's alive, it has a 95% chance of falling apart back into the four smaller blobs. If we add more of these red blobs into the mix, you'll notice that they rarely ever come together. On average, a megablob only exists around 10% of the time. But if we were to reduce the chances of the megablobs dissolving to only 1%, the void would suddenly be filled with them. This fact hints at an important law.
So, it's obviously very, very overly reductive because it is for a general audience. So you're not getting, there's no specificity of what molecules he could be talking about. I mean, that's on purpose, right? Nobody, the layperson is not going to understand what these specific molecules are. What he's saying is that you can have chemical reactions occur. So you can have syntheses and you can have decompositions, right? But it depends what you're forming, right? Something can be very stable or can be very unstable. If you have chemical reactions that are proceeding in the direction of enhancing stability, then you're more likely to retain order as it forms. I mean, not order, but just you're getting more complex molecules, right? Chemistry has to happen on the way to abiogenesis, right? Nobody is denying that we're starting from small molecules, right? We're starting from ammonia, methane, formaldehyde, or carbon dioxide. We're small molecules with 2, 3, 4, 5 atoms. We're at the very beginning stages, and these molecules are obviously highly abundant. Can be seen, we can take them for granted that they're there. That's not a problem. So,
law that governs our void, the law of stability. Unstable blobs fall apart and vanish. Stable ones endure.
One.
Now, watch what happens if we speed this up dramatically. Maybe a couple of years per second, maybe even a couple million. You can see our blobs keep getting random jolts of energy, so they combine with others to form more complex compounds. Most attempts fail and fall apart, but every so often, by pure chance, you get a compound that is more stable than the blobs it's made of. This doesn't happen because the blobs want to build more complex structures. It's just because these new configurations happen to be more favorable in the environment. And now, when these complicated compounds become abundant enough, they too get a chance to combine, making our void increasingly complex. And one day, by accident, this causes an extremely unique shape to form, one with a special property. See, the blobs it's made of just happen to attract similar blobs from the surrounding environment. This red blob always attracts green blobs, and this purple blob always attracts yellow ones. And piece by piece, all these blobs attract their opposite.
Yeah, I mean, there was a little disclaimer that said this process is simplified or simplification. Yeah, so this is very overly reductive, right? I mean, we don't see a backbone. I mean, this is RNA, presumably, right? And so just what's being explained is just that by chance, the concept of base pairing arose, right? And it's just, look, this vast potentiality of compounds that can be made, and this idea of complementarity, right? You have millions and millions of years, and don't forget that chemical reactions happen on the order of picoseconds. So a second to humans versus a second to molecules. A second to molecules on the molecular world is a trillion times longer. So we're talking about an unthinkably long span of time that nature has to play and figure out some interesting combinations. And don't forget, by the way, that there are hundreds of billions of stars in the Milky Way galaxy and hundreds of billions of galaxies. So there are virtually limitless opportunities for interesting chemistry to arise. And so nobody should look at these eventualities in prebiotic chemistry, right? Something interesting happening like base pairing arising and go, that's so crazy. What are the odds? I mean, what are the odds? One in a billion, one in a trillion, one in a quadrillion, one in a quintillion. Doesn't matter. You have more than that many opportunities in the universe for such events to occur. Even when you're dealing with infinitesimal odds, if you're lining that up with astronomical opportunity, then it becomes a certainty that such interesting things will occur. So base pairing, right? That's an important thing, because we're going to be talking about replication. In order for replication to occur, there has to be a template and then something that, you know, what that template is producing. So base pairing is obviously necessary to have evolved. So let's go from there.
Until their counterparts suddenly snap into position next to the original shape. Now, this shape goes on to do the same thing. Its green blobs attract red ones and yellow ones attract the purple until another shape yet again snaps into position. This new shape looks exactly like the original. What just happened, fully spontaneously, is replication. One shape became two. This marks the birth of the first replicator. We don't know exactly what this replicator looked like. It might have been a single standalone molecule or a group of molecules that worked together to replicate. There's a lot of debate on this today, so instead, let's represent the replicator as a character. How about this?
Yeah, I mean, it's almost certainly RNA, right? Because when you look at the properties of RNA, in terms of both replication and other catalytic activity, right? So RNA that can influence polypeptide synthesis, just RNA ends up being so versatile that it's hard to imagine the first replicator being anything other than RNA. Now, I don't, you know what I mean? Maybe there's more debate about this in Origin of Life research than I'm aware of, but I don't know. It's hard for me to imagine anything other than RNA being the first replicator. But the layperson audience does not know what RNA is really in any sophisticated way, so make it a character, you know, that's fine. Let's do that.
This one here. Perfect. Keep in mind, it's still just a lifeless molecule, one without any intent or purpose. Now, you might think that the chances for the replicator to form were extremely unlikely. But in our void, where we have hundreds of millions of years to play with, what might seem impossible to us becomes virtually inevitable. And the thing is, the replicator only has to arise once. Once it's here, it can take the simpler compounds available in the environment to copy itself at a much faster pace. And so it does that, until it entirely fills our void. At least, that's what you'd expect. But there is a...
I love Fish Hat going like, Meyer, you gonna jump in? This is making a little too much sense. My skin's starting to burn. The knowledge is seeping in. What am I gonna do? You gotta jump in and tell me how this is bullshit, please, before I start understanding how prebiotic chemistry could have worked. Come on, Meyer, help me. He's suspiciously quiet. I thought he would have jumped in by now.
Flaw in the process. See, during the replicator's conquest of the void, one of its copies makes a mistake. Perhaps a stray ray of UV light hits it during the replication process, or the replicator uses a building block it wasn't supposed to. As a result, what we're left with is a new shape, which is slightly different from its parent.
Right, so there are multiple mechanisms by which mutation can occur. So there is replicative error, and so we understand that very well in the context of DNA replication, but with RNA replication, actually RNA replication has even lower fidelity, right? You have a much higher opportunity for mutation because you don't have the a double-stranded situation. And then beyond that, you can, like, UV light can strike a particular atom in one of the bases and cause the rules of complementarity for that base to change such that it will interact electrostatically with a different base more efficiently and thus code for a different base. So mutation puts the variety in the pool here, right? So we have a strand that is replicating, but without perfect fidelity. So you have variety now. And then that is where natural selection first came into play. So natural selection started happening before life existed. Right. This is something that people have to understand, is that you have natural selection operating on sets of molecules. And this has been demonstrated empirically, very thoroughly, by many different research teams that ribozymes will evolve by natural selection. There's resources that are required for replication, and then certain sequences will proliferate more because they can better utilize the resources towards self-replication. So it's all totally mindless, right? It's just statistical dynamics. It's blind statistical dynamics. If a particular sequence replicates more efficiently or more rapidly, you'll get more of that thing. That's all there is to it. We're not even at life yet, and we're showing natural selection. That's what people have to understand, especially you, Fish Hat. Pay attention.
And so its properties might be slightly different, too. This error might be harmful. For example, it might make the copy less stable. It could be beneficial, making the copy better at replicating. Or it could be neutral, not changing the replicator in any meaningful way. This marks the final milestone in our void. Mutation. Many species of replicators now occupy the void, and what they do is they replicate themselves.
Might be a good place to stop, Brandon. That's
perfect.
Quite a story that's being told. one of the first things that jumps out.
Quite a story. Too much science. I don't know how much more this is going to play. So it's a pretty good video. A little bit too anthropomorphized for my taste. But this is for a general audience. I make content for a general audience, but I don't shy away from the more technical explanations. Obviously, when I explain systems chemistry, I get into the weeds and really talk about systems chemistry. Most people don't want to watch that. They'd rather watch this. So, you know, Derek is making a video that is going to reach more people. And it did. It got, you know, millions and millions of views. So, I think it's good. I think it's like if a video like that helps millions of people understand, wow, mutation and selection predates life. How crazy is that, right? So I bet a few million people learned that for the first time watching this video. So that's good. That's a good thing to help people understand. Systems chemistry is probably the main area that the DI and Tor, all these asshats, just flat out are like, no, not a thing. Right. In our debate, I kept trying to talk about replicators and Tor's just like, no, they never did it. It's no, that's not real. And it's just like, all right, what do you even do with this shit? Like, I'm showing you papers where they achieve 20-fold amplification and you're just going, nuh-uh, that's not real. I don't want it. No, that's all they've got. So Meyer's going to do that. So Tor does that. So Meyer's going to do that. They teach each other how to be disingenuous pieces of shit. Dembski teaches Tor how to be a disingenuous piece of shit about specified information. So I'm sure that Tor taught Meyer how to be a disingenuous piece of shit in denying the entire field of systems chemistry. So let's check that out.
Out to me is that the affirmation that all this is taking place in some kind of pond, prebiotic ocean, we hear that all the time. Turns out that the polymers, the long information-bearing biomolecules, such as proteins and DNA, will not polymerize in water. Okay, so we have heard...
Really? You sure about that, Meyer? Because I've made a fuck ton of content showing that, yes, they fucking can. This is all you asshats have, is nuh-uh. Tor says, oh, it's endergonic amino acid polymerization is endergonic. That's true. That's why you have chemical activators. And I showed paper after paper after paper of prebiotically plausible chemical activators that will do it. And that's not all. There's other mechanisms such as wet-dry cycling, which has been demonstrated in analog prebiotic conditions. Dave Deamer's team, they go in, they put the monitors, they let some of a few cycles of wet-dry cycling occur, right? They're dry out and then they get wet again, dry out and they get wet again, because you have these natural cycles. You have day-night, you have warm-cold. And they polymerize. They collect fairly long oligomers from this process. So you do not have a fucking leg to stand on, Meyer, you lying piece of shit, when you say that they will not polymerize in water. Yes, they fucking do. You're lying. I'm sorry.
I've heard this over and over and over again, all the way back to Darwin, the idea that life began in a warm little pond, or we hear about the prebiotic soup. And
yes, you'll listen to Tor whine and cry all day long about how much he hates soup. Sorry, all of this has been validated. So, I mean, the hot spring model is very convincing. Hard pressed, I would say that that's kind of where I would lean, is a hot spring model, but it doesn't have to be a hot spring. Hot spring is just very useful because of the heat and but like a mineral tidal pool also. Offers wet dry cycling. Hydrothermal vent is another model. I don't know where that stands as much anymore. These are all competing ideas. But the idea, I mean, a smaller pond makes more sense in terms of chemical reactions. You know, things finding each other in a pool of water as opposed to the fucking ocean. Right, that's a little. It's much, much harder. So, my money is on some kind of a hot spring or tidal pool or something for these first sets of replicators to arise. And they have a lot of mechanisms available to them, right? I talked about a bunch of different prebiotically plausible chemical activators. Those are in solution, right? You also have catalytic mineral surfaces where components can come down and chemistry is catalyzed upon the mineral surface and then go, and then you have more incoming. So there's lots of mechanisms for this chemistry to occur. Meyer is both too dumb to understand them and is lying about them not existing. So I'm sorry.
As Professor Jim Tor has pointed out in a number of his articles and videos, polymerization of the subunits of those large molecules is unfavorable in an aqueous environment. It's run energetically, it's going the wrong way. So
yeah, it's endergonic. That's why you have chemical activators. And that's why you have wet dry cycling, where they dry out and then get wet again. I'm not going to do this like 5-10 times, but
that's just part of the mythology that just gets repeated over and over and over again. The idea also that you can zap things with energy and get what you need. This goes back to the Miller-Urey experiment in 1952, 1953, And what Miller and Urey did was they didn't.
It doesn't go back to Miller or Urey, right? They'll never shut the fuck up about Miller Urey because they want to brainwash people into thinking that all of origin of life research is contained in this one experiment 70 years ago. It's so fucking disingenuous. Like, do you know how, like, just pretending that all of this science since then just doesn't exist. And I'm sorry, all of the mythology, you're talking about mountains of empirical science. That is all of this research published in peer-reviewed journals. You're just pretending it doesn't exist. I mean, wet, dry cycling, God damn it. They put the monomers in the hot spring, wait a little bit, and then they collect the oligomers. There is, you don't even have this bullshit excuse of, oh, well, they were in a lab and they did lab stuff with the human mind lab stuff. You don't even have that shit. It's in a fucking hot spring and they get polymerization. So you're just pretending it doesn't exist. I'm sorry.
Indeed. Using a spark discharge chamber, tried to simulate lightning striking simple gases like hydrogen cyanide or hydrogen in the early atmosphere. And what they got was they got two or three of the protein-forming amino acids, but they got those protein-forming amino acids.
No, they got all of the proteinogenic amino acids and more. You are lying again, right? In the 50s, they detected three or four. Later analysis of the residue on the containers that they saved revealed that there was like 26 different amino acids in there. So they made, I believe, all of the proteinogenic amino acids, right? The ones in proteins today, plus other ones. So you're addicted to lying, Meyer. Anyone can Google this shit and see that you're fucking lying.
Amino acids in a vessel with lots and lots of other chemical subunits. And those other chemicals are subject to what are called interfering cross reactions. So right away, the amino acids would react with those other things that were produced in the...
Yeah, nobody gives a shit, right? Miller-Urey was 70 years ago, and all it is used for when we point at it is go, oh, simple molecules. From simple molecules, you can get amino acids and other interesting compounds, right? It's to go from here to here. That's it. Nobody is pretending that, oh, in that vessel, we're going to get a cell now. Nobody is fucking saying that. It's just like, hey, very simple compounds and energy input yields biologically relevant monomers. That's it. They will never talk about like 21st century chemistry in this field. They'll all just go Miller-Urey. Shut the fuck up about Miller-Urey, right? It's like whining about Darwin when talking about modern evolutionary biology. It has nothing to fucking do with it. No modern evolutionary biologists are Darwinists. That was way a long time ago. Darwin would have no fucking idea what's going on in evolutionary biology. He didn't know that DNA existed. He knew fuck all about what we're doing now in evolutionary biology. It's like referring to quantum physicists as Newtonists. That's how dumb it would be to be doing what you're doing by fixating on ancient science and pretending that it is accurately descriptive of the forefront of the field. Every time with you guys.
Experiment. Creating a sludge called melanoidin, which is the curse of the prebiotic chemist. It's not just getting the subunits that's sufficient. You have to get them to polymerize, and that's a problem in an aqueous environment.
No, it's not.
Even in a hydrothermal vent, but it's also a problematic. It's also a big problem to keep those amino acid subunits from interacting with other chemicals that are in the collection vessel.
Like what? What other? Be specific. What are amino acids reacting with? Rapidly, such that they can't polymerize. You wanna tell me that?
So this little cartoon video just washes over a huge number of problems. Also, the early Earth's atmosphere was not reducing as those experiments presupposed. And so it was energetically unfavorable to the formation of the amino acid subunits. So you've got multiple problems. You've got the all the simulations?
No. So there are plenty of models that work in both reducing and oxidizing atmosphere, and you're pretending that we need some kind of specific atmospheric conditions to get amino acids. Motherfucker, amino acids form in the vacuum of space, you idiot. We can do spectroscopic analysis and see amino acids floating around in space. They don't even need an atmosphere at all. So you're just lying.
Simulations that have lent plausibility to the story that the video is telling were done under unrealistic conditions that did not match those on the early Earth. The products of those simulations would be immediately subject to interfering cross reactions. They would furthermore not polymerize into long chain like molecules. And the big problem of all is that there's no mention in this video of the problem of information. That for both the proteins and the constituent parts of the DNA, the individual subunits have to be arranged in very specific ways.
He didn't say anything about proteins or DNA, Meyer, you disingenuous sack of shit. First of all, again, life predates DNA. Derek was talking about abiogenesis. Why the fuck would he be talking about DNA? Right? Very clearly that was RNA. And you're again whining about information. Where was the information? Where was the special magic sauce? Where was God going like this? Oh, here's the information now. I put the information on the RNA, so now it can be a thing. It's not it. He showed four monomers, explained how base pairing came about, and then one is a template for the other, and then the template for the other. Right? That's it. That's the information. The information is the sequence of monomers. That's it.
In order for them to perform any kind of function. And when they get to the whole question of replication, they again elide that whole problem. Because what we've discovered is, first of all, that the molecule that people are proposing as the primitive replicator that would get natural selection and random mutation going is an RNA molecule. And scientists have been unable to produce an RNA that will copy more than about 10% of itself, maybe as much as 20, but
Nope. Flat out fucking lie. Lying piece of shit liar tells dumb lie. And this is the exact lie that James said in our debate. So I don't know if you told James that or if James told you that, but both of you are just fucking lying. I nailed him with this in the debate and he just went la 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 la. Since the beginning of the 21st century, and so Joyce is kind of the godfather of most of this. So he achieved the first fully self-replicating ribozymes. Now, admittedly, at first this was through a ligase mechanism, so not a polymerase mechanism, a true like nucleotide at a time thing. So first of all, you're just lying. This 10% shit. I showed papers where there's again 20-fold amplification. So there's no way to get that much amplification of a sequence if on the first round it is not fully self-replicating. Dozens, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of papers with fully self-replicating ribozymes, and furthermore. After the ligase mechanism, we started figuring out with the polymerase mechanism as well. So James Atwater is one of the guys I interviewed in, I think it was when I was doing fact-checking tours bullshit performance. So I talked to a bunch of people, a couple of them in systems chemistry, to talk about the mechanisms by which these ribozymes are replicating. So we have replication by polymerase mechanism as well. So, and you can all go look this shit up, right? It's very easy to Google this and look at autocatalysis and self-replicating ribozymes by ligase versus polymerase mechanism and how much progress has been made. So he's just lying. He's just pretending that this whole subfield isn't real. That's all it is. And it's very complex chemistry, so he's going to get away with it. Fish Hat doesn't know what the fuck he's talking about. Fish Hat is not going to go to Google Scholar and look up self-replicating ribozymes by polymerase activity. He doesn't know what any of those words mean, and his brain would melt if he tried to read one of those papers. He's never going to do it. So Meyer just says, it doesn't work, doesn't happen. And he's like, oh, okay. And all the viewers are like, oh, okay. And that's where we're at. That's where it is just lies from a liar and a credulous viewership that just says, must be true because man with the tie. That's it.
A small percentage of the RNA molecule have they been able to get that will copy a section of itself in a very small section, between 10 and 20 max. But moreover, even that limited degree of self-replication is dependent upon very precisely arranged bases, the so-called on DNA, the nucleotide basis and the basis on the RNA. They have to be arranged very specifically, and they get arranged in order to produce the primitive replicators, the primitive partial replicators that we can do in the lab. The experimenter has to do the arranging. It has to specify the sequence. So what's...
Yeah. In order to do research, you have to have something to do research with. And so we say we're going to try these sequences. So what? Nature doesn't have to do that shit. Nature can just make billions upon trillions upon quadrillions of sequences, and then some of them will do something. That's it, right? There are many, many opportunities, right? There is some percentage of sequences that will be functional. And nature tries a bunch and gets some. It's not that hard to understand.
Being simulated in an experiment like that. Well, the need for intelligence to generate information, to generate even limited self-replication capability. So this cartoon tells a wonderful story, but it's not plausible scientifically at almost every point along the way. And this is why origin of life research as a scientific discipline has reached a state of impasse. There is no accepted theory of the origin of life.
It's at an impasse. They're all just shitting their pants and twiddling their thumbs and going, oh me, oh my, what will we do? Those guys at Discovery Institute sure were right. We're all dumb. And they sure have been and have been showing us how dumb we are for trying to do science. Give me a fucking break, dude. It's like there's no impasse. Yet there's no like... everyone agreeing that this is the exact sequence of events. Of course, they're all examining different things. And look, to be honest, the reality is probably a synthesis of multiple models, right? There's some aspect of RNA world that has to be true, right? It's almost certainly the case that RNA was the first replicator. And so all of this shit that we're figuring out about autocatalysis and self-replicating ribozymes, that has to be a factor in abiogenesis. Then you've got metabolism first people, and they're figuring out where, like, the, you know, the sources of energy for all these processes could have come from. There has to be a synergy there, right? You can have short ribozymes that are catalyzing dipeptides and tripeptides and tetrapeptides, which are in turn catalyze, right? Even very short oligopeptides can have catalytic activity. So there's a synergy here. You've got RNA that's making something, and this is making something else, and so you have some source of energy, and then you have replicators, right? So we don't know. Yeah, no one is walking around saying we've got it all figured out. Absolutely not. But we have so many pieces, very firmly, empirically substantiated, right? We have ribozymes that self-replicate. How is that not fucking incredible? Like, if like Fish Hat's brain needs to explode, right? Meyer cannot allow Fish Hat to realize that we have demonstrated fully self-replicating ribozymes in the lab. He can't know that, or he'll start to go, well, wait a minute, if RNA can self-replicate, then I'm starting to piece together that there's a way that this shit could have happened, right? Demonstrating sets of molecules replicating and evolving by natural selection kind of fucking sounds applicable to life forming, no? Well, we're there. We understand that, you know? There's a lot to go, but... that's it. All they can do is lie. No, they only do 10%, blah, blah. Fucking bald-faced lie.
Leading scientists, even in the field, acknowledge that. And even Richard Dawkins has acknowledged that. So it's
Dawkins is not an origin of life researcher. And honestly, he does not understand the field. I've listened to him try to talk about it. He doesn't fucking know what he's talking about. Sorry.
It's quite almost shocking that you would have a video like this get 7.7 million views or whatever it is, and then have people make these credulous comments. One other thing I noticed.
You mean like your idiot credulous viewers that you make a bunch of bullshit lying the whole time, and they're all like, this is so amazing. These are the best, smartest guys ever. Praise Jeebus. Praise Jeebus. I love my Jeebus. Tell me all the lies that help me praise Jeebus because science isn't real. It's just projection all day with these motherfuckers.
Leapt out at me is this appeal to time, as if that helps. James Tour, organic synthesis chemist, nanotechnologist, holds a endowed chair at Rice University.
Let me interrupt you. All molecules fall apart so fast because I say so. I'm James Tour. Molecules fall apart. You can't even get RNA or proteins because they fall apart. No, they fucking don't. I'm sure he's going to talk about Tour's fake paper that I obliterated in another video. So let's let him pretend that matters, and then I'll make fun of him.
University has published over 1,000 peer-reviewed papers in organic synthetic chemistry. Emphasizes time and time again that molecules do not move towards life. They the natural reactions between these simple chemicals or these simple molecular cells.
Well, apparently they fucking did, because life is here, right? Molecules don't move towards life. Viruses exist. Viruses are not alive, and yet the particular configuration of molecules within a virus does move towards life, right? It enters cells and demands the replicative machinery be geared towards generating more viruses. So that's an example of molecules moving towards life. You cannot sit there and say molecules don't move towards life and just deny all of the principles of systems chemistry that show how, yes, they absolutely fucking can. Right. And just this, you know, molecules don't know about life. I've said this as well in all the Tour stuff. Atoms don't give a shit about molecules. They form, though, don't they? Atoms aren't like, oh, I really want to make molecules. No, they just do because of naturalistic principles. Just because of the electromagnetic force guides bond formation. And then similarly, now we're, you know, talking about electrostatic interactions that dictate base pairing. But these are all just naturalistic principles. This is just the fucking rules of the molecular world is what begets this hierarchical, right? You have emergent properties. There are molecules exhibit emergent properties that you would not get from looking at individual atoms. And then the same goes for biomolecules. And then the same goes for an individual cell. And then the same goes for a multicellular organism, right? You have emergent properties every step of the way. And so just blindly asserting molecules don't move towards life. They don't fucking have to move towards anything as though they're sentient. It's just shit happens. Right? Chemistry happens because of the rules of the molecular world. That's it.
Substances do not move in a life-friendly direction. The extent to which they move a little bit in a life-friendly direction is only a product of the intelligent intervention of the prebiotic simulation experimenter of the...
No, move a little bit. That would be like monomers polymerizing to make biopolymers. Or biopolymers forming autocatalytic sets, both of which are things that we can very easily observe and which you deny. So you're just wrong and lying.
The intelligent agent. So what's being simulated in that case? Again, the need for intelligence to move chemistry in a life-friendly direction. But he has a recent paper that's even more damning to this idea about time being the hero of the plot, as a famous quote from George Wald, prebiotic a scientist who was interested in prebiotic chemistry back in the 1950s, he said that time is the hero of the plot. Well, it's not. It turns out that the processes of chemical decay happen at much faster rates than the processes of chemical assembly. If you let things run, they're...
No. So, yeah. So he's talking about Tour's dumb paper. So I made a whole video on this, but just to give you the gist of it, James is so fucking dumb that he takes like, you know, like a polypeptide of like 100 amino acids or whatever. And he just pretends that it's this long straight chain and says, well, here's the kinetics associated with one peptide bond dissociating from interacting with water. And then I'm just going to multiply that by the number of subunits. And there you go. That's how unstable the polypeptide is. There's so many ways that this is wrong. It's ridiculous. Number one, proteins fucking fold. They fold, and then all of the residues that are on the interior are protected from water. So proteins aren't like a long string, right? They're blobs. They fold into and they are protected from degradation that way. So that's part one. There are proteins that are stable in boiling water. So that's that should give you an idea of how wrong this is, that proteins are just falling apart. They're not fucking falling apart all the time. They're in your cells and they're not falling apart. So what's the problem here exactly? And then secondly, in the context of prebiotic chemistry, right? Not in a cell, but in prebiotic chemistry, when you can have when you have polymerization taking place on catalytic mineral surfaces, those surfaces are also stabilizing the resulting polymer. So there's multiple angles here to disprove this. They fall apart so fast. It's so crazy. I mean, it just doesn't fucking happen. It doesn't happen in biological systems, which should cue you into the fact that it doesn't happen outside of them either. And then there are multiple ways in which the logic that Tor implied in that piece of shit fake paper that was published in a piece of shit fake journal demonstrate that he just doesn't know what the fuck he's talking about, right? Proteins fold. It's not just, here you go, water could attack any peptide bond and it'll fall apart like so fast. So citing Tor, I mean, obviously, you know, of course he's going to cite Tor. They pay him to make up bullshit for them to solve this problem. They do not want their viewers to understand how prebiotic chemistry could possibly work. So yeah, we're going to be making fun of James quite a bit in some, because James is in that one video and then he's in the movie, I believe too. I think he's credited as being in the movie. So hopefully I can get a copy of that movie somehow without paying any money. Yeah, we'll see how that goes.
We're going to decay faster than anything will get built. And so time actually works against you. Anything that might arise that is life relevant as a kind of building block is going to be subject to decay much faster than it is going to be subject to assembly. So this is, Dr. Tour and I have a paper coming out with a volume with the Cambridge University Press early next year.
I love how he's like Cambridge University Press, as though that is affiliated with Cambridge University. We wrote some bullshit. We're self-publishing some bullshit, as though we are professors at Cambridge publishing this incredible research. You're idiot frauds, publishing lies for non-scientists to read and be brainwashed by.
So many things have been written about this. My book, Signature in the Cell, is a comprehensive critique of these prebiotic simulation experiments. Also, the other thing that jumped out at me was this appeal to chance. The information content of modest length proteins is so immense that if every event in the history of the universe from the Big Bang 13.8 billion years ago till now had been devoted to searching for one of the possible amino acid combinations, that all of those random events would have searched but a tiny fraction of the total combinatorial space associated with a single modest length protein of about 150 amino acids long.
Yeah, so a couple things. Any protein has tremendous variability. Almost every single residue could be most of the different amino acids, proteinogenic amino acids. There are usually a handful or even only one or two highly conserved residues in the active site of, say, an enzyme. Then if you look at a structural protein, that's not even a thing. Structural proteins don't have active sites. But like a receptor or an enzyme, yeah, there's a couple highly conserved residues in there. The rest, tremendous variability. This is what these asshats will never talk about. They pretend that a protein is that specific amino acid sequence only, which is a lie because you have things like polymerase enzymes in different organisms that have different sequences and they perform polymerase function. And then just obviously, you know, you change one amino acid all the way over here, nowhere near the active site, to 10 of the different amino acids. It's not going to change the shape or the function one bit. So that's part one. Tremendous variability, they pretend, isn't there. Number two, nature is just going for some function, and then it can refine over time. And then he's just absolutely flat out lying about the percentage of possible sequences in the combinatorial space that that will have function. And plenty of research has been done on this, as upwards of at least one in a million sequences will have function. Shostak did one fixating specifically on ATP binding, I believe it was, binding ATP, and showed that 1 in 10 to the 11, I think it was, would bind ATP. That's a specific function. So he's throwing around these numbers like 1 in 10 to the 77 to the gazillion to the bajillion. No, you're just fucking lying. You're pulling numbers out of your asshole when actual empirical science has been done to show out of these libraries of billions and trillions of proteins, how random sequences, how many functional sequences will arise. So it's your word versus actual science that has been done. You lose.
I do the math on this in Signature in the Cell. Chance, even without the James Tour consideration of the fact that things are degrading faster than they're building, even if you just assume a very favorable environment where amino acids get to shuffle, the blobs that he was talking about, they're going to explore a tiny fraction of the total possible number of combinations there are.
It's like, yeah, so what? There's many, many, many possibilities. Nature makes a fuck ton of them and gets some stuff. It really is that simple, man. Like, yes, you can talk about for a sequence of 100 amino acids how many possibilities there are. But again, there's to get a particular function, there's astronomical numbers of sequences that will achieve that function, not just one, right? You are misleading the viewer every time when you pretend that that protein can have that sequence only. It's demonstrably false. In so many different ways. I already explained it. I'm not going to do it again.
It's like a great big bike lock with only one combination. And
it is not like a bike lock with only one combination. It's like a bike lock with a fuck ton of combinations that will all open the lock. Okay?
The ratio actually breaks down. It's about 1 over 10 to the 77th power possibilities for every one that will perform a biological function. So you're just, it's like having a huge bike lock, only one combination, and you're turning dials. Even 13.8 billion years is not enough time to have a realistic chance of finding the one or very few combinations that will perform biological functions among all the ways there are of arranging amino acids. So this short video is, I think to chemists, it would be offensive to talk about blobs. You need specificity in chemistry to build anything.
Yeah.
And
it's not offensive. It's overly reductive, but it doesn't offend me. Derek makes videos for a supremely general audience, and they're highly stylized and well produced. And people, not everybody is equipped to learn about systems chemistry and RNA world hypothesis and shit like that. I want to encourage people to go deeper and get into the specifics, but most people are not going to do it. And so more people watch Derek's content than mine. And that's fine. I like doing what I do. Also, I don't have the budget to make shit like that. Honestly, if I did, I would make shit like that too. But yeah, it's just a big old cope fest over here from Meyer. I'm sorry.
Things just don't blob together. Also, this idea that things will find their complements, you know, their right. opposites. Well, that implies that everything is highly ordered in biological chemistry.
No, it doesn't have to be highly ordered. They're in whatever pool, whatever pool all of those monomers are in. They just, they're like, it happens in a cell too. What's the problem? It's an electrostatic interaction, right? Yes, it's true. Everything's floating around in a cell too, right? When you're doing DNA replication or transcription or anything like that, you have all the monomers floating around. You do have to wait until the molecule enters the enzyme and gets annealed, right? You have to, or whatever, you know, whatever process is going on, you have to wait for the collision to occur. In order for a chemical reaction to occur, a collision must occur. Right, so whether it's gas or in a solution, they're all floating around crazy, but they're going super fast. Molecules go so fast. Chemical reactions go so fast. So you can have trillions and quadrillions and quintillions of molecules all react in a second. It'd be a highly, you know, exothermic situation, but it definitely can happen. So I don't know what the fuck you're talking about. When you have a complementary base pairing going on, if it floats and lands over here, it'll anneal because it's going to make those three hydrogen bonds. And that's very energetically favorable for it to remain in that configuration, go to a lower energy, and release that energy to the surroundings. That's entropically favorable.
In biochemistry, in the sense of like a crystal of salt. That Na attracts Cl. It is true that along the DNA molecule, there's a complementary strand and A's attached to G to T's and C's to G's. But along the message-bearing axis, there are no chemical forces that determine the sequential arrangement. And instead, they're highly irregular, but quite specified to function. They're not simply attracting your opposite. It's not Na plus Cl. It's not simply a complementarity of pairing, but rather...
Well, yes, it is. The base pairing is just complementary base pairing. What you said about the initial strand, that is a particular sequence that is arrived at by evolutionary processes over billions of years. So you're either lying about base pairing or you're just denying the time, evolutionary time to get the initial template anyway.
Rather a specificity of arrangement that is information bearing that's absolutely necessary to life. And again, that requirement of life is also completely elided in this video. So the problems with it scientifically are legion, but it is a nice story, is it not? And it makes you feel like, well, maybe it could have happened that way.
Kind of like your nice story that God went zip, zap, zoop. Oh my God, I got DNA. And oh, let's see, zip, zap, zoop. And I got a trilobite now. And oh, but I don't like that. So blah, 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 now I got a dinosaur. That's a fucking story, is what that is. This is science. And you can pick on Derek's overly reductive video if you want, but you can't hide from the entire field of origin of life research that demonstrates all of these principles conclusively.
And that's really where we sort of engage this in our new film, The Story of Everything. We contrast two stories, the story that says that the universe and everything in it, planetary system, and especially life, are all the products of undirected, unguided, purely materialistic processes.
How are you going to spin the planetary systems one? We can see protostars and protoplanetary disks forming with fucking telescopes. We can see planetary systems forming naturally with our eyeballs. How are you going to spin that one into, well, you need a god to go, okay, get this stuff over here. Okay, all right, good, we got it. Where do you see that? Do you see any god hands in the universe pushing planets and stars together? I don't.
And that's the story we just saw. The new film we have, The Story of Everything, contrasts that story with the story we think is the real story, which is that at crucial points, and in a way, all the way along the way, there is evidence of design, that there is behind the material universe, there's evidence of a mind at work.
Yeah, because you believe in an impotent, dumb fuck god that went, okay, I have a universe, well, there's these atoms. What should I do? Well, they're not making molecules, so I'm going to go zap. And, oh, I got molecules now. That's not cool enough. Maybe I'll make them make cooler molecules. Zap. Oh, now I got these long ones. But now I want something better of cell. Zap. Oh, and now I got a cell. And just every fucking step along the way, this idiot god who couldn't construct a universe with parameters set for life to evolve by natural principles has to step in. And like, there's nothing cool enough. I'm going to make it better. I'm going to make a cooler thing with my zappy god magic. That's the dumb god that you believe in. Theists believe in a much better god, a much more defensible god. I don't believe in that one either, but I could wrap my head around believing in that god who just went universe, boom. And then the rest unfolded according to what we understand scientifically. You believe in a loser god, Meyer, which makes sense because you're a fucking loser. So that works out.
I'm so glad I played that clip for you and got all of that, because as a layperson, all that I knew was it feels like they're just going forward with like the Miller-Urey experiments. Like they just kept going and then they got life in the lab, just the way that they told the story. The idea of the globs, like you mentioned, just seems utterly simplistic in terms of how things actually are. And then there was a lot of just so happens and just so happens and just so happens in the mix as well. But I'm so happy that you just said everything that you did, because
I was so worried because science was happening and it was hurting me that science was coming into contact with my dumb face. But then you said all the dumb lies that reminded me how smart and special I am for not believing science and instead going, yeah, duh, God went zip zap. And I'm back to my old credulous self. Thank you, Stephen. Thank you for brainwashing me in real time and discouraging me from gathering real knowledge. Really appreciate it.
Watching that animation and then watching some of the beautiful, intricate animations inside of the story of everything, it's a really stark contrast in terms of...
Yeah, it's a stark contrast because Derek's video was about abiogenesis, and honestly, not even. It was about entirely prebiotic chemistry, and the propaganda movie you're talking about shows animations of the interior of modern eukaryotic cells. How the fuck are those not going to be different, you moron?
Of the level of detail and specificity that your documentary film goes into that actually describes the reality of what is at play versus kind of this, don't look too closely, but you can kind of imagine it. In fact, let's even turn this little guy into a character. Let's anthropomorphize him. So now you can kind of imagine he has a will of his own and he kind of just wants to survive. And you know what I'm saying? There was just enough of that.
He specifically said that's not what it is. He specifically gave the caveat. It's not a lie, but it's just for the... And that's what you motherfuckers do anyway. You pretend that you... like... You're whining about the anthropomorphization of molecules when fucking Meyer is always like, look at the thing walking along the tubule. It's like a little guy, right? Right? How could it be like a little guy without a god, right? You're whining about the exact fucking thing that Meyer does, you idiot.
Like storytelling.
There's no impulse in chemicals to want to survive, you know? And
right.
That's also a kind of weird philosophical fallacy. The striking thing to me is there's absolutely no mention of information. And
right.
Watson and Crick, and especially after the Crick sequence hypothesis in 1957, which was subsequently confirmed by what we now call the molecular biological revolution, and the idea that DNA is not only has a beautiful double helix structure, but it contains four chemical subunits in alternating and irregular sequences that are functioning like alphabetic characters in a written language or digital characters in a section of machine code, which is to say they collectively contain instructions or information for building the proteins and protein machines that cells need to stay alive.
Yeah, evolution's pretty cool, huh?
Proteins will not assemble in a prebiotic soup at all? First of all, they're not going to polymerize?
First of all, no, you're wrong. You can very easily get polypeptides in a prebiotic soup. That has been demonstrated conclusively countless ways.
But secondly, they're not going to assemble with the right sequence of amino acids so that they will fold properly to perform the specific jobs that are needed to keep cells alive. And there are manifold such jobs and therefore separate types of proteins in cells.
Yeah, so you're not going to get the specific proteins that are coded for by genes in a modern cell in a prebiotic context. Fucking obviously. That doesn't matter. That's why we're talking about these systems of cooperating molecules. So that's where we do get a little bit, we're not sure, right? We definitely have RNA and we definitely have polypeptides. The precise way in which they interacted, I don't think we're sure. I mean, others know more than me about this, experts in the field, but I'm not, I don't think anybody is suggesting, obviously, that we know exactly, right? We had these RNA strands that are, they're self-replicating here in conjunction with these proteins, right? I don't know exactly how it happened, but you're just lying about the possibility, about the potentiality for all of these molecules to come about. And then poisoning the well by comparing what they should have done prebiotically to what they're doing in modern eukaryotic cells. It's completely idiotic.
Hundreds and even minimally complex, simplest sorts of cells. So,
the most minimally complex modern cells, you disingenuous twat. So again, they always do this, right? Look at the simplest bacterium. That's the simplest any cell could be. No, it fucking isn't. No, it fucking isn't. It's the simplest cell alive now. A big difference.
Just the lack of specificity here. And we end up in the documentary showing some of the miniature machines that are built by the code. And
so cool.
And so you need that code to build those machines. You can't build them without it. And so if you don't talk about DNA and RNA in the story and the information they contain, you're not going to get replicators without information, and you don't get information without mind. That's the problem.
No, the problem is that you blindly assert that with zero evidence. You can get random sequences of nucleotides. Some of them perform a function, and then you get natural selection. The fucking machines that you show in your piece of shit propaganda documentary are the products of billions of years of evolution. You leave that out every time.
It's overlooked here. Information points to an intelligent cause. Think of an analogy to what's going on in the cell as a 3D printer. And most young people are familiar with these devices. We have code, and you want to build a three-dimensional structure, and you write the code for doing that. And that's what's going on inside cell. You have digital information directing the construction of essentially mechanical parts for protein-based machinery.
No, gene expression is not like a 3D printer. That's a very dumb analogy.
So. And you're not going to the primitive replicator thing, especially even if it starts with an RNA molecule, you're only going to get an RNA molecule. There's no explanation in that for how you get to what's called the translation system, where you have digital information directing the production of proteins. That's a jump that's rarely even addressed in these RNA replicator scenarios.
No, it's addressed. We can describe ribozymes. Ribozymes can have many different functions, right? So you can have self-replication, but you can also have ribozymes that catalyze. I don't know exactly. I mean, there has to be some of it, but polypeptide production. It's cooperative networks of molecules. So you can't trust Meyer to give you an accurate assessment of what the research in the field is doing, but yeah.
So this is very, very simplistic Darwinian thinking, and so many things wrong with it. You're just triggering me. That's all you're doing.
That's so funny.
That is it. And we're done. Okay. Yes, Meyer, you are triggered. You get triggered anytime you are reminded what a disgusting, lying, disingenuous, propaganda peddling piece of shit you are. And I'm going to trigger the hell out of you for quite some time. All the bullshit that you've been putting out and are continuing to put out this year, get ready. Once again, I'm going to take a big old steamy dump all over all of it. And there's nothing you can do about it. It seems like you morons have stopped attempting your desperate damage control hit pieces after you figured out how much that shit backfires, because it just gives me more ammunition to make fun of you even more. And you've kept quiet about me for a little while, hoping that I would move on and hit other stuff, and I did. But now you've been mouthing off a lot, and you're going to have to deal with the repercussions here, because I'm going to absolutely ruin all of your propaganda. So look forward to that. That went so much longer than I thought. I was like, wow, we've got a 15-minute video and a 20-minute video. And I just end up saying all this stuff. But anyway, like I said, we've got a lot more of Discovery Institute debunking coming up. Meyer, Tor, Lennox, that one, his crappy movie. So all of that coming up soon. Thanks for watching. I'll see you next time.